I'm Mindy Todd. Welcome to The Point. Later in the hour, legendary singer, songwriter, and activist Judy Collins joins us, and we take The Point on the road to visit a flock of chickens in Barnstable. But first, a preview of WCAI's upcoming five-part series titled The Changing Face of Aging, Challenges and Opportunities. News director and series editor Steve Junker joins us along with reporters Catherine Iden and Patrick Flannery. Welcome to you all.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So, Steve, what are some of the reasons you wanted to focus on aging as a series topic?
Some of this came out of a statistic that 30% of the Cape's population is 65 and older, and that's twice the national average. And as we start thinking about this, we think about the impacts for the region. In almost every measure of community, there's jobs and the economy and healthcare, and it impacts construction, it impacts family structures. So there are ways in which this poses a challenge to the region, but equally it's a source of opportunity. But also, in part, I think it came out of an awareness, which I think we all just recognize looking around, that what it means to be 65 or 75 or 85 is significantly different from what it meant 15 or 20 years ago. And our ideas about aging are changing. And thanks to advances in medicine and technology, the reality of what it means to be aging has been changing, too. So in many ways, it's never been a better time to be in human history to be aging, because, you know, you can have your joints replaced. Mm-hmm. You can remain physically active. You can stay in your home longer and with better safety. But with that also, this the range of challenges arises, challenges around housing and the economy, economics, and healthcare, and the opioid epidemic. Right. So we wanted to take a little closer look at this portion of the population and understand a little more of what's happening here.
Okay. Catherine, one big change we're seeing in the number of people who continue to work past their traditional retirement age of 85, and one of your stories in the series looks specifically at working seniors. What are some of the questions you wanted to answer?
Well, I wanted to see just how many in our population are actually going back to work, and if they're going back to work or staying at work longer or starting new careers or something to that effect, why, right? I mean, some of the answers you can kind of think of off the top of your head, and some are that you have to work, right? Mm-hmm. And one of the stats that I learned in my reporting is that nearly half of Americans have not saved any money by retirement age. So if you kind of trickle that down to here on Cape Cod, where more than 30% of the workforce is over 55, there's got to be a lot of people who have to work because they don't have that retirement account. But it's also a community where there are a lot of people who've moved here after long, vibrant careers that might have pensions or significant retirements. And there are folks within that group of people who are going back to work, too. They're doing it for the love of it. And so I went out and talked with someone who's working and who almost has a second career and is in his, I think he's in his 80s now. Or he's 77, and he loves it, but he's doing it because he loves it. He worked hard and long hours in his first career as a construction superintendent, doesn't have any hobbies. This is his hobby, and he clearly loves it when he talks about it. And then, of course, I talked with another person who had left the job market to care for family, care for her kids and then her grandchildren, and, you know, is in her 50s and needed to go back to work, and is also looking at the potential of having a robust second career herself as she gets into that. Mm-hmm. So,
and you have a little bit of sound?
I do. This is from Cheryl Proveo talking about that.
At first it was financial, but now that I've actually gone back to work, it really has helped my self-esteem and my sense of self. I feel very productive now.
And that's something that I've heard from a bunch of the people that I talked to in reporting this story, is that, of course, financial needs are often paramount, but there are so many other benefits, and they can translate into, you know, even better health. Mm-hmm. And Cheryl was saying that, you know, she just feels so much better about herself, is starting to kind of create a vision for where she wants to go. Family is still hugely important to her, and she still plans to have a major caregiving role for her grandchildren because her kids are working. But the job piece now is gaining in importance and for her.
And tough to come out of the job market for that long of a time and then trying to get back in, you know, getting those skills and, you know, technology changes so quickly.
Yeah.
That's another challenge, I guess, you'd face. And I think, and I'm just thinking back to my dad when he retired, he always had this other little second job.
Yeah.
He and my uncle drove the cars at the auto auction. That was his job. He said, I have to have a reason to get up in the morning.
Yeah.
But I think it was social.
Yep. Yeah. And of course, you know, there are preconceived notions, right? I talked with David Augustino for the Workforce Investment Board, Development Board, and he was saying that a few years ago, actually, they went out and polled local employers to say, how do you look at older workers, right? There are a significant portion of our workforce, whether they've been in a job for 30 years or whether they're new to one, and employers said, oh, we love them. They're great. Mm-hmm. They're loyal. They've got lots of skills to impart on younger people, blah, 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 blah. But then there still are some roadblocks, and Cheryl ran into that. She didn't have any references, right. And she mm-hmm. could not get a job. She had to turn to a program here on the Cape through the Elder Services of Cape Cod called the Mature Workers Program, and that helps people kind of through kind of paid community service find job placements and then hopefully find permanent work elsewhere, whether it's in nonprofits or in the private business sector. Yeah.
Patrick, we know the opioid epidemic is impacting the young, the old, the rich, the poor, pretty much everybody. You explored one specific way addiction is impacting seniors. Tell us more about your story.
I didn't even know, Mindy, that this was a problem. I mean, we always hear about the opioid crisis, but to sort of see this segment of people, grandparents raising their grandchildren because of this addiction happening on Cape Cod, I was blown away by the commitment and just the resilience that comes with having to suddenly step up in what should be your retirement years and revisiting a chapter of your life, which is parenthood. And then you have the added stress of here you're taking on this grandchild, and at the same time your own child is in treatment mm-hmm. or may not have survived. So in the course of this reporting, we were able to speak with two grandmothers with very different situations. One has been raising her grandson since he was 6 months old. He's 11 now. She's 65 and a single mom again. Mm. No financial assistance because, he was not placed with her through the Department of Children and Families. She went to probate court and filed for emergency custody 11 years ago. Has no regrets, but at the same time is... 65, and she still has dreams of retiring, but those were put on hold. Mm-hmm. Spoke to another grandmother who is named Wendy Marks, and a year ago became the guardian of her 4-month-old granddaughter. And in her situation, she is trying to involve her own daughter, who is 27 and in treatment for opioid addiction. And it's very encouraging to watch and sort of observe how she's not angry. She's wanting her daughter to be mom again. And at this point in her life as a grandmother, sort of knows her role, but is also showing a lot of tough love. I do want to intro a little clip here from the grandmother who began raising her 11-year-old grandchild 11 years ago.
He and I are... We're unusual. We're not a typical family, and I tell them all the time that all families look different. There's no one kind of family, but I'm not assimilated into the community at school. I'm looked upon as different. People don't know how to handle a grandparent raising a grandchild.
That's Christine Yulia, and she's from East Falmouth, and she kind of touched there on not only her own role as a grandparent raising a grandchild, but also how she's perceived in public. Mm-hmm. There's a stigma. And for that reason, people are meeting twice a month in East Falmouth. There's a support group known as Grandparents Raising Grandchildren. And at one meeting that we attended last month, it was closed door, but there were 10 grandparents there. And most of them agree that people often will perceive them as having done something wrong in their own parenting role, which mm-hmm. created the addiction for that person, and now it's come sort of back to bite them, if you will. And that's really not the case at all. What this is a haven for grandparents to sort of get together and talk about this.
Yeah, and the numbers, as you say, the numbers are growing. Mm-hmm. It's really amazing how many numbers of grandparents are raising grandchildren. And it's a good point about the different. Nobody wants to be different. And I suppose in looking at the positive side of this, the fact that there are so many grandparents raising grandchildren, maybe they'll make some of those conversations a little easier because you think of that poor child who's kind of caught in the middle of, why is my friend got parents and I don't? And
exactly. And if you can believe believe it, there are, at last count, 2,300 grandparents raising their grandchildren without help. There's not a parent in the home. This is them doing it on their own, more on Cape Cod than anywhere else in the state.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Steve, senior centers play a major role in providing services and supports to seniors, and we're fortunate to have a number of great senior centers throughout our region. As the needs of seniors are changing, how are senior centers responding to those changes?
So our reporter Brian Morris went out to cover this story, and senior centers, of course, have long been a mainstay in our communities. Number of towns right now across the Cape proposing new or expanded senior centers: Falmouth, Chatham, Dennis. And Brian, but going along with expanding in, the senior centers is this idea that the role of senior centers is changing right now, the programs that they offer and the people that they're aiming at. So it's, in some ways, it's not your grandfather's senior center anymore.
Right.
And a number of them are even renaming themselves. They don't want to be called senior centers anymore. So Brian went out to talk to visit some senior centers. He spoke to some senior center administrators. He spoke to people going to senior centers to get a sense of what's really happening and what direction this is going right now. And they offer programs, I know, like tribal drumming and hula hoop classes, but they also offer estate planning classes and technology training. And one of the things he was saying is that oftentimes it's people in their early 60s as they come in, and they're the caregivers for older parents. Mm-hmm. And they come in and they're recognizing that the senior centers have a lot more to offer than they expected as they walked in the door. And so it's taking a look kind of at what direction senior centers are heading right now across mm-hmm. the Cape.
And of course, as we age, we tend to need more medical care. What are some of the challenges and opportunities you explored in medical care and treatment for people as they age?
Well, our reporter Sam Houghton went out to look at this, and he ended up speaking to an orthopedic surgeon and really kind of getting into the nature of replacing hips and knees and what it means and how much this has changed in the last 15 to 20 years, that now you can have joints replaced and be out and active inside of a month or even a couple of weeks in some cases. And also looking at the fact that because we have such a large population of 65 and over, and we're so close to Boston, we're really positioned very well for medical care across the Cape region. Mm-hmm. And so he went diving into that story.
Catherine, aging in place is shorthand for continuing to live in your home as you get older, which most people would like to do. But many homes haven't been designed for specific needs for older populations. What are some of the challenges to aging in place, and how are they being addressed?
Well, yes, as you said, you know, the AARP has done multiple studies over the past 15 years to kind of quantify what we kind of anecdotally know, and that is that most people want to stay in their homes, but our homes aren't necessarily designed for us to age there with, you know, if it gets harder to walk around, or if we need a cane or a walker, or if we need help getting up and down, or if we have problems bending over, any kind of thing like that, which really can happen at any age. And so this kind of phenomenon called aging in place has emerged over the last decade or so. And it actually started with a construction builder in Texas, who I talked to for this story. He kind of realized that, wait a minute, we could maybe start to think about ways to make homes safer, anywhere from little things from, you know, changing a doorknob if you have arthritis to a levered handle that you can press down, all the way up to major additions and things. I mean, you can, of course, spend, you know, sky's the limit. And so he created this course, which now, fast forward a decade or so, 7,000 people have taken it across the country. It's an emerging trend kind of down here where I think people in the construction trades are starting to kind of get hip to the idea. The local home builders association has just offered its third certification course based on what this guy in Texas developed. But interestingly, when I talked to the construction guy in Texas, the first class he ever taught in 2001 in Florida, he thought he'd get a lot of home builders. And instead, he got people from all sorts of industries, realtors, bankers, therapists, all sorts of folks who came in who were interested in helping to understand how they can work with people in the construction industry and help their clients so that their clients can be more educated and more empowered to be able to hire a contractor and say, hey, I don't just want a grab bar. I want to be able to look at my house and make changes now so that I can be here for a long time.
Yeah. You have a little bit of sound?
I do, from someone who's really taken this idea to the next level.
But there'll come a time when I just won't be able to do it anymore, and I don't want to feel shut in. It's one thing to have to stay in, but it's another thing to feel shut in.
That's John Sweeney. He lives in Chatham. He's 80. He's very active, very, you know, all over the place, has, you know, just very busy guy. But when he retired, he said to himself, wait a minute, I want to stay in my Chatham house that he's owned for more than 30 years forever. And he's really, really taken in the aging in place concept to heart. And he's done everything from put a second floor on his bungalow so that he could have a caregiver someday.
Oh.
To rearranging his bedroom to have a sitting room if he ever has mobility problems. He put
it out of everything.
Oh, my gosh. It's unbelievable. And so he took me on a tour of this house.
It's exciting. I'm looking forward to hearing the series. But just real quick, big topic. How did you narrow this down? It was a lot of stuff probably that didn't make it into the series.
There's a lot of stuff that didn't make it into the series. But even so, it was a great opportunity to try to figure out how to tackle this wide range of stories, and how do you even dive in, and what slices do we pull out to talk about?
I can already see follow-ups following this.
And we do have several pieces that came off the table that we're going to bring back and have follow-up reporting we'll bring to you.
Our series, The Changing Face of Aging, Challenges and Opportunities, starts next Monday. You can hear stories daily during Morning Edition and All Things Considered, as well as on our website, capeandislands.org. Steve Junker, Catherine Eidrick, and Patrick Flannery, thanks so much for coming in and giving us the preview.
Thank you.
Coming up after a break, a conversation with singer-songwriter Judy Collins.